Hey guys, I hope you are having a good week. If you were with us last week, we held our State of Student Loans webinar where we talked about everything that's going on in the federal and private student loan space. And we had at least the base level of that event for free. So I wanted to make sure that some of the more important items that were discussed that we shared on the podcast as well. So what you're going to hear in this episode are two snippets from the State of Student Loans webinar. The first is just telling you about how to advocate for yourself. There's a lot of confusion going on, both with the borrowers and the lenders when it comes to student loans right now. And I want to make sure that you have all the tools that you need to advocate for yourself in the event of a dispute. And then the second portion that we're going to cover goes into detail about the current status of not just the SAVE plan, but also income-driven repayment plans in general, because there are several plans we've talked about that were due to be phased out that, as a result of the recent happenings with the SAVE plan, have still been left on the menu of options from which you can choose. So after this quick intro, we're going to get into two snippets of the State of Student Loans webinar. If you want to listen to the full replay or watch the full replay, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can click the link in the video description. If you're listening on the podcast, you can click the link in the show notes. You put your email address in and we will send you not just the replay of the webinar, but also some additional resources that we've sent to our list in the past week following up from that webinar. All right, let's get started. Are your student loan payments or loan balances a major obstacle in your financial life? Then tune in and let's escape student loan debt. Now, when we talk about some of the things that are happening in student loans, I'm going to share several things that directly contradict things that you may have been told by your federal student loan servicer. And it's very important that when you are advocating for yourself with federal student loans, especially right now, that you document everything. And there's a few reasons for that. The first is, as you will see, there are several servicers who are going into coming out of the business, transferring accounts back and forth. It's been a real mess in recent months. And all of these federal student loan servicers are underfunded, and they have admitted to Congress that they are trying to ramp up hiring as quickly as possible to make sure that they have adequate staff to handle the requests and the questions that are coming into student loans. As a result, if you have been paying attention to your federal student loans, it is highly likely that you could be in a situation where you are told something from a customer service representative or you're sent a piece of mail from your servicer that directly contradicts the Department of Education guidance. And it could just be the fact that the person on the other end of the phone or the chat has just started working there and they're not aware of some of the most recent changes. So as we talk about this, if I say something that doesn't sound like what your servicer has told you, I'm going to show you directly from the Department of Education where that guidance originates, and I want you to document all of your conversations with your student loan servicer. There is no benefit of calling a student loan servicer right now. Everything needs to be email or chat or fax correspondence, as old as that is, so that you can have a paper trail. If you have that paper trail, you need to find the relevant Department of Education guidelines, many of which we will send you as resources in this message or at the end of this webinar. And then you need to either or both file a dispute with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and the Student Loan Ombudsman. The Student Loan Ombudsman is the person or the office that is tasked with making sure that their borrowers, their customers, are being treated appropriately by the student loan servicers. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is the entity that basically makes sure that many of these actual for-profit companies are held to account when they are mistreating customers. So if you're not getting what you know you should be receiving, you need to make sure that you use that guidance and file those disputes, because we're seeing many instances where this will put you back in good standing in terms of getting what you are owed. All right, we are going to move on. Now, let's go to the SAVE plan. And this is probably why a good portion of you signed up for this webinar. The SAVE plan replaced the revised pay-as-you-earn plan. And it had, and I say had because I think that the plan eventually will either cease to exist, it will revert back to revised pay-as-you-earn, But I don't think that the things that they said were going to be in that plan will eventually be in that plan. But there was all types of stuff that was in this plan. They were changing the way they were calculating payments. They were lowering the percentage of your discretionary income that you were going to have to pay. If you borrowed a small amount, small being $12,000 or less, they were radically reducing the amount of time that you had to pay on those loans before they were forgiven. There was all this stuff that was going on with the SAVE plan. Now, not to get too political, but I'd like just to give you the background of it. So Republican-led states are not fans of any of the forgiveness programs. It's just a point of fact. And if you disagree, you can see that there are a series of Republican-led states that have led lawsuits against the Department of Education, arguing that they don't have the authority to offer these payment programs, mainly because of how much it costs to do so. And the argument is that they cannot instate these many this program that has such a high price tag without going through Congress. As a result, they have sued the Department of Education, but they had to sue them in a manner where they could prove standing, which essentially means they had to prove that they had been harmed by the legislation. You can't just sue somebody in this country. You have to prove that you've been harmed in order to sue. The landmark legislation that established standing was actually involving MOHELA. So MOHELA is a private entity, but they have a connection with the state of Missouri. MOHELA did not bring a lawsuit, but for the first round of Biden's student loan forgiveness, the state of Missouri said, well, part of the revenue that MOHELA earns from servicing student loans goes to us as a state. So even though MOHELA isn't suing, we can sue on behalf of MOHELA because, in a roundabout way, we as a state of Missouri have been harmed by this legislation. The Supreme Court said that they were able to do that, and that opened up the door for other states to sue the Department of Education directly. So there's lawsuits from the state of Missouri and the state of Kansas against the Department of Education trying to block the SAVE plan. It's been through several different rounds of appeals, and the most recent appeal fully blocked the SAVE plan. It was, hey, we're blocking these elements of it. They are saying until this legislation is completed, the Department of Education cannot offer this payment plan. And when I say legislation works its way through the courts or is completed, that likely means that this is going to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court is in recess. They're not going to be back until the fall. So it is highly likely that it's going to be at the earliest, the end of the year, before we have any resolution as to what's going on with the SAVE plan. And the problem with that is twofold. The first problem with that is there are a lot of things that are in limbo in terms of switching to other plans while the SAVE plan is in limbo. If you've logged on to studentaid.gov, you've probably noticed that at least online, right now, you cannot apply for the SAVE plan. You cannot apply for any income-driven repayment plan online, and you cannot consolidate your loans online. All of those areas on student aid website have been blocked out because the Department of Education doesn't know how to basically reorient themselves as a result of that ruling from the appeals court. But the biggest problem, especially if you're trying to get forgiveness on your loans through either income-driven repayment or public service loan forgiveness, is right now they are placing everybody that's on the SAVE plan, and that's over 5 million people. They're placing them in what's called administrative forbearance, which means this is not something that you requested. It is a pause in payments that has been ordered by your loan servicer or the Department of Education because for some reason or another, they have decided that you just can't make payments right now. In the beginning of this year, the rules regarding administrative forbearance were changed. And what they said was if you are placed on administrative forbearance by your servicer, then even though you're not making payments, we are going to treat those payments or non-payments as if they count towards public service loan forgiveness and income-driven repayment. The thought process behind that was it's not your fault that your loan servicer has said that you can't make payments. So we can't punish you for something that's not your fault. So if you're on for 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, a year, we're going to treat it as if you still paid during that process. Unfortunately, the Department of Education has said that they are not going to count this period of administrative forbearance for the SAVE plan towards either public service loan forgiveness or income-driven repayment plan forgiveness. And that sucks. And it sucks because there are a lot of people who are, really close to getting public service loan forgiveness. But even if you're not close, even if you are close to income-driven repayment plan forgiveness, we have no idea how long this is going to last. So if it lasts for 6 months, that's a long time to be working for a government entity or a nonprofit entity, and you could be working there specifically to get public service loan forgiveness. And one of the rules that was temporary during the pandemic, which has now gone back to the old rules, is the requirement that if you're seeking public service loan forgiveness, you can't just work for 10 years at an eligible employer and request forgiveness. You have to remain employed at that eligible employer until you get the forgiveness. So, for example, if I work for 10 years for the government and I apply to have my loans forgiven under public service loan forgiveness, and it takes them 9 months. Well, at the end of that 9th month, when they come to forgive my debt, I have to verify that I still work for an eligible entity. So by having this extended pause and not giving people credit, and at least online, not giving them the ability to switch to a different plan, they're essentially telling people you don't get credit and you can't do anything about it until this changes, and we have no idea when it changes. So these are the things, at least online, that we're dealing with when it comes to the SAVE plan. But I want to make sure you know that there are options if you're sitting there saying this simply won't do. So let's lay out what some of those options may be, and we'll talk about the pros and cons of each of those options. The first, and this actually answers a question, not the email question, but in terms of how you correspond with your student loan servicers, I will still answer your email question. You can switch plans via paper applications to the other income-driven repayment plans. You can switch to the income-based repayment plan. You can switch to pay-as-you-earn, and you can switch to income-contingent repayment. And I'll explain why one is in green, one is in red. Pay-as-you-earn is listed there because pay-as-you-earn was supposed to be phased out by July 1st. You're not actually supposed to be able to still sign up for the pay-as-you-earn plan. But as a result of all this stuff that's going on and the reduction in options for borrowers, the Department of Education is saying we're going to keep this option open until we have a resolution on what's going on with SAVE. So if you were eligible for pay-as-you-earn, thought you missed the boat, you can actually still sign up for a pay-as-you-earn plan. If you're not familiar with pay-as-you-earn and you're wondering, like, what's the big deal about that plan? The biggest deal is if you have graduate loans and you're paying your loans back using income-based repayment or the SAVE plan, you have to pay on those loans for 25 years until any remaining balances are forgiven. With pay-as-you-earn, you pay a little bit more than you would pay under the SAVE plan, but your loans can be forgiven after 20 years instead of 25. So you're kind of stuck if you have graduate school loans with this, and hopefully I said graduate school loans the first time. If I didn't, if you have graduate school loans on SAVE plan, it's 25 years, on pay plan, it's 20. But it puts people in this scenario where it's like, okay, let's say that my payment on the pay-as-you-earn plan is a couple $100 a month more than it is under SAVE. Well, that's not ideal, but I only have to pay on this for 20 years as compared to 25. Would I rather pay $200 more but be finished 5 years earlier? Would I rather pay for 5 years longer but save a couple hundred dollars a month? That's kind of the decision that people have with pay as you earn and save. Now that the plan is still open, you have the ability to say, all right, I'm going to go back and see if this plan may be the right thing for me. Because at least once that application is processed, if save still hasn't been resolved, I can start getting credit for public service loan forgiveness again. If you go this route, you have to do a paper application. We'll put the link to that or the resource and the attachment to that in Friday's email to everyone who has registered. And you need to fax that application in and keep track of the confirmation that it was delivered, or you need to mail it. And do not do regular mail. It needs to be certified mail. Again, you need to have a paper trail for everything you do with student loans. So you need to send it in a way where you can verify when and that it was received. So that's the first option. Here's the downside to that option. The Department of Education has also said that servicers are likely going to pause all income-driven repayment plan application processing until SAVE is resolved. So we have people who, since last Friday, have been putting themselves in a situation where they fax it in or they mail it in, and they're kind of just hoping for the best. But there's a very real possibility that they sit on that application as well, and the Department of Education has stated plainly that they do not know or have any guidance from servicers on when that's going to resume. So if you feel like it may just be, hey, it might take just as long with these other plans, but I just don't like all the stuff that's going on with the save plan. I'd rather have a plan that's written in stone that I'm not concerned about, and these other plans are more written in stone. You may still decide to switch plans. Just be aware it's not going to be as simple as, oh, I faxed it over and next month they start payments. It could sit there just like it would have with Save, but whenever that process resumes, you would be on a plan that I would consider more stable. If you want me to answer in the question and answer why I consider it more stable, happy to do so. The other thing you need to be wary of with this option is whatever plan you switch to, you probably need to be prepared to stick with that plan moving forward. Not all payment plans. The one specifically you need to be aware of is the income-based repayment plan. But there is a negative consequence in terms of the amount of interest that is accruing against your student loans for going on to an income-driven repayment plan and then leaving that plan. So you don't want to just switch, blindly. You want to have like an actual, like articulated reason for why it makes sense to switch. And wherever you switch, you likely need to stay there. Now, another option for people who I would say are much, much closer to having their plans for or their loans forgiven, specifically under public service loan forgiveness, is the 10-year standard plan. Now, I know you're probably sitting there saying, well, duh, if I could pay my loans off in 10 years, I wouldn't be trying to do any of this anyway. So, like I said, if you're 15 years from having your loans forgiven, this isn't the option for you. But let's say that you are a year from having your student loans forgiven under public service loan forgiveness. The 10-year standard repayment plan, even though it's not an income-driven repayment plan, is actually an allowable payment plan under public service loan forgiveness. And not only that, there is no pause to applications for people who are joining the standard plan. So if I'm sitting there a year removed from having my student loans forgiven, it may be worth it to pay way more than I would have had to otherwise, but at least after I pay more, I can immediately start getting my credit again towards public service loan forgiveness, and after that year, have it forgiven.
From Escape Student Loan Debt, this was the Escape Student Loan Debt Podcast, a show for established professionals whose student loan payments or loan balance.